Well, the message, I just want to update some of those on the tape list who may not receive the newsletter and don't know what's going on. We announced a couple of new initiatives in the newsletter. We now have our messages here on MP3, which basically is just on CD, that you can get 12 messages on a CD. So that's something we're working on now, and we've got, I think, three already done, and you can certainly benefit by that. We get those available, we'll send you one and save the cost of a lot of postage and cassette tapes as well. Also, we had a announcement in there about the new construction over here to my right on the sound recording room, and we received a number of special donations to that for the equipment and also for the room, and want to thank those that did that, and also those who would like to help that certainly realize there's that fund there. But we're going to use that for basically Discover the Truth, internet program, possibly radio, and then also music specials we can record for those many who would like to have CD on of our music. We can do that as well once that's completed. So many good things are happening at this time, and Yahweh is certainly blessing. Well, here we are at the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Passover is the first of the yearly observances in Yahweh's calendar, and it represents the starting point of all the others that follow in his plan. And that's what these feasts do. They reveal his plan for man. It was a plan Yahweh set out from the beginning, but it took a few detours because the weakness of the human heart got in the way. Most people, you know, have experienced disappointments in their life. I suppose everybody has, one time or another. Maybe the children didn't turn out as we expected. Maybe our career didn't go as we had planned. Maybe our job didn't pan out. But you know, sometimes even the doctor gets sick. What about Yahweh? You think he might get disappointed once in a while too? What about Yahweh? Nobody ever thinks of him. They want him. They want his help for them. But they never put it in reverse. The original hopes Yahweh had of an exclusive, special people who would follow him and worship him exclusively were dashed. Stiff-necked Israel would not bend the knee. And because of their continual rebellion, Yahweh made a bold move. He opened his calling through the death of his son to anyone who would take hold of the promise. Anyone on earth could have an opportunity. Israel would be included, of course. We read in Romans 9:27, says a remnant of Israel shall be saved. But they would have to share in the promises with others too, who would also come in, who would be grafted in. And therefore, when we look at the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread that follows it, we see a progression, not an ending, of a salvation plan that Yahweh has established at creation itself. Passover commemorates an actual event that occurred long ago in Egypt. Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread also foreshadow events to occur in the New Testament, in a continuation of that plan. What Yahweh did by becoming the Passover for us through his Son was fulfilled in part. But he spoke of another fulfillment of the Passover in the future. When Yahshua in Matthew 26:29 said that he would eat it anew, he was giving a prophecy. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. There was a prophecy. Shouldn't this be a clear message that the Passover is an observance that has not been ended in the new covenant? We know from Isaiah 66, Ezekiel 45, Zechariah 14, that the feasts will all be included in the coming millennial kingdom. All the feasts will be enforced under Yahshua's reign. We see the importance of these special observances throughout history. From ancient days to the kingdom, the Passover is key to Yahweh's blueprint for salvation. When that Egyptian firstborn in every house died, a message was being sent, a clear message to all mankind. You see, it was to the firstborn that they received double the portion, double the inheritance of the family, the birthright. And when death of that firstborn occurred in Egypt, Yahweh demonstrated that those people not covered by the blood of the Lamb will have no inheritance in Yahweh's kingdom. The other lesson we learn is that we are covered by the blood only if we follow Yahweh's instructions explicitly, without fail. And for us, it means we aren't completely covered by the blood of Messiah if we don't do what Yahweh has commanded, and we face death, just as the Egyptians faced death. The Passover and the feast have a much more serious implication today than they ever did in Egypt. The physical consequences anciently for disobedience now translate into spiritual ramifications, if we make that connection, you know, into the spiritual. The physical consequences are now spiritual. Looking back in history, we see that Yahweh began calling his people out at the Passover, ultimately to take them from Egypt unto himself. He does the same today in the new covenant. He does the same thing. He calls us out of the world. This feast is an annual reminder for all who would be his elect not to get involved in the world, but always come out of the sin, or you're going to risk being enslaved by it, just as Israel was enslaved in Egypt because they repeatedly refused to obey Yahweh the Father. Passover offered a chance to rededicate their lives to him, to turn back again in sincerity. And that then is marked by the next observance, unleavened bread, and how we actually go about doing that and taking in the sincerity of unleavened bread. Turn to Exodus chapter 12, if you will. Exodus 12 is a warning against anyone who would not take this feast to heart. Exodus 12, and I want to look at verse 19. "7 days there shall be no leavened bread in your houses." Actually, it says there shall be no leaven found in your houses. I know some people think it's okay to have alcohol in your house, but we know that that has been leavened. This says there shall be no leaven found in your house. "For whosoever eats that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land." Either way, you'll be cut off. "You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your habitations shall you eat unleavened bread." Question. There are a lot of calendars out there today, a lot of people keeping different days, as well as different months even. Does it matter? What did we just read? 7 days there shall be no leaven found in your houses. 7 days. Which 7 days are we to eat unleavened bread and not have leaven in our houses? Any 7 days? No, let's look back at verse 18. He spells out which 7 days. In the first month. So first of all, we got to find the first month, or we're going to have everything else wrong. Once we establish that first month, then we count, it says, on the 14th day of the month at even, okay, you shall eat unleavened bread. We know that that can't be on the 14th, because the 14th, he says, is the Passover, and the 15th is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Translators did us an injustice here. The Jewish Study Bible, JPS, Tanakh, says from the 14th day. New Revised Standard Version and New International Version say from the 14th day at even, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 20th day of the month at even. This is the 21st day of the month. And until tonight, we keep this feast and eat unleavened bread. So now we know exactly when it is. And I'd say to Yahweh, for Yahweh's part, it is very important if we get it right. When he spells it out so specifically, I'd say it does matter. And I'd say we had better get those days right, not just follow the calendar of whatever group we happen to be fellowshipping with at the time. And that goes for all doctrines, brethren. It matters. Or else this book itself doesn't matter. Might as well throw it out. If it really doesn't matter, then just get rid of it. If you're going to pattern your life by this book, then you either get it right or you don't get it right. Deviations are expressly prohibited and no excuses are accepted. I challenge you, as part of what this feast is all about, to get it right. Find out what the Word says and get it right. Leviticus 23, 5 to 6 tells us, in the 14th day of the first month at even is Yahweh's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is a feast of unleavened bread. But you can go out there right now, you can find a number of those people who believe that the Passover is the 15th. Leviticus 23, 5 to 6, very clear. And on the 15th day of the same month, Feast of Unleavened Bread. 7 days you eat unleavened bread. You start with the 15th and you eat it for 7 days. Ending on the 21st. That's today, the 21st. We know, we counted it. Same thing, Numbers 28, 16, and 17. It says Passover is the 14th, unleavened bread is the 15th. Crystal clear, no mistake. The 14th is not the 15th. The 14th is not the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It's Passover. It's Passover according to Leviticus 23:5, Numbers 9:3, 2 Corinthians 30, verse 15, Joshua 5:10, 2 Chronicles 35:1, Ezekiel 45, 21. It says the 14th is a Passover, the 15th is a feast. But they say, and there will be those who say, the 15th is a Passover. This feast in particular, as we observe it by examining our beliefs and our tenets, our unleavened bread of truth is all about getting our understanding and practice in sync with Yahweh's command. That's what it's all about, to get it right. And no wonder Satan works so hard on this one right here, Passover Feast of Unleavened Bread. If he gets the foundation wrong, the rest of the structure, is not strong. It's flawed. It's off its foundation. Therefore, each time we participate in the Passover and feast, we undergo a renewal with Yahweh. And that's why it's so important to keep these set times properly, including keeping them on the right days. It does matter. It matters to Yahweh. So then it should matter to us. It better matter to us. Most important of all, these days are called His. They honor Him. They're central to our redemption. If we understand what they mean, they honor Him. And they have a meaning and a purpose behind them. It isn't just something Yahweh decided, give some people something to do. I'll have them take out their bread and eat flat bread for a week. I'll make them take wave sheaves and wave them in front of me. And I'll make them take a lamb, cut its throat, drain the blood. It all has a purpose. They're central to our understanding of His redemption. If we don't care whether we get these days right or not, then our attitude is we don't care about Him either. That's what it boils down to. Turn to Hebrews chapter 9, verse 13. For if the blood of bulls and of goats and the ashes of a heifer, sprinkling the unclean, sanctifies to the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Messiah, who through the eternal Spirit offered Himself without spot to Elohim, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living Elohim. We'd rededicate our lives to Yahweh as we recount the sacrifice of our Son and remove leaven from our lives. If you go out to the road right now, I have a challenge for you. Take a poll of everybody driving by and ask a simple question of all those people in the cars. What is leaven? And I, no doubt, would say that only about 25% would get it right. More women, of course, than men, because they have more experience in the kitchen. Most would probably answer, well, those who do get it right, yes, it's yeast. Yeast. Of course, we know that's only one substance of leavening that we're not to consume during this time. Leavening is any chemical that causes a puffing up of a cereal grain or fermenting of a sugar. That's what leavening does. It's a puffing action, and it's found in many different substances, and it's characterized by evil, false doctrine, malice, and wickedness. That's what puffing up does. Think about it. Every one of those things is a result of a puffing action. A man who becomes puffed up comes up with his own teachings. A man who has anger is puffed up. He's putting himself first. A wicked person is out there puffed up because he wants to get ahead. And he wants to do it by evil means to advance himself. A puffing up. Were you aware, and I just learned this recently, that baker's yeast is not something that's been around for thousands of years. Baker's yeast is only a recent, quote, invention in the last, since the mid-1800s. For thousands of years, they made leavened bread by holding back some of that dough and inserting it into the new lump. Little leaven, leaven's a whole lump. That's how they used to do it. But in the 1800s, they got found a microorganism. Saccharomyces cerevisiae was isolated and cultured for its remarkable ability to puff up, to work as leaven. It's a yeast. It's a type of yeast that works really fast. And that worked right in with our culture, you know, our culture that's built on economic success, because you can speed up that action in the dough. You can make more bread and sell more, whatever it might be, bread or rolls or donuts or whatever it might be. So it became very popular. It was something that revolutionized baking. The effect of baker's yeast on bread dough is really just a fast-forward version of what we have naturally in the air. Yeast floating around in the air lands on a piece of dough, and after a long while, it will leaven that dough if it gets mixed in. Of course, it's what leavening symbolizes that's important for us. Leavening in the scriptures symbolizes false teachings, which we learned this week, hypocrisy and wickedness that leads to corruption. And when leaven is removed, these evils that represent such things by leaven are symbolically removed. Has anyone ever called you odd? Yahweh's people are called peculiar, but actually, let's turn to Timothy 2:14. Actually, it's not a real accurate translation. Titus 2:14. Did I say Timothy? Titus 2:14. Who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. And actually that word should be an acquisition. He got himself an acquisition, a people zealous of good works. It's speaking directly of Yahshua's sacrifice at Passover for a people zealous of good works. Didn't matter what race or nationality you were, if you're zealous of following him. To renew our dedication, if you are not seen as, let's take it for the way it's translated, peculiar by the world, then you need to reassess your walk, because we are to be different. Yahweh's people should be a light of righteousness. And the further this world sinks away from that righteousness, the more the light is going to show up. Yahweh's people should be different from the world, different from the norm. Most of churchianity sets its standards by public opinion, by the values of the world, just like the world does. If the masses don't like a certain stand on a teaching, moral issue, most churches today will just change to be more popular. Come the judgment, Yahweh isn't going to take a survey to define the worthiness of an individual to stand in his sight. His standards are right and true, and if we don't meet them, we face judgment. No discussion. There wasn't any back and forth hesitation in Yahweh's mind when Uzzah reached out to that ark, Ark of the Covenant on the ox cart when it started to flop around like that to hold it steady. When Yahweh says, don't touch it, they were supposed to carry it on staves, on those rods. He reached out just to, so it wouldn't fall. Yahweh says, no one is to touch it, period. No excuses, no special circumstances. He struck him down dead on the spot. In Acts 5, there was no debate in heaven when Ananias and Sapphira held back part of the money they had promised to the disciples. There was no discussion about mitigating circumstances, special needs, whatever it might be. When their sin was revealed, they immediately fell dead at the apostles' feet, first one, then the other. When the sons of Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, in Leviticus 10, lit the incense with their Bic lighters instead of the holy fire Yahweh commanded, what happened? We read in Leviticus 10:2 a simple statement. There went out a fire from Yahweh and devoured them, and they died before Yahweh. Certainly, since these were the sons of the very high priest, Yahweh would have, you'd think, cut some slack for them, but nope. That's just the way politics are played. That's the way our world works, not the way Yahweh works. But isn't Yahweh too harsh? Wasn't that kind of unfair? No, man is just too rebellious. Yahweh has standards. We forget that. We might think that Yahweh is too harsh when it is we who have become too lenient in our walk. It's important we get it right. Oh, we're going to slip and fall. And that is the other lesson we find in Passover, that Yahweh has grace through the blood of Yahshua. But he doesn't expect us to keep going out and doing it again and again and again. In Colossians 3, verse 25, he that does wrong shall receive for the wrong which he has done. And there is no respect of persons. All sin must be paid for, either by you or by Yahshua. Nothing goes unpaid. There's nothing that slips through the cracks and Yahweh says, okay, it's forgotten about. No, it had to be paid. Then he forgets about it. But it had to be paid. And either Yahshua pays it or we're going to pay it. I'd rather have Yahshua pay it, wouldn't you? I certainly don't want to have that hanging over my head. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 2. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast and every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Master and was confirmed unto us by him, by them that heard him? NIV says, for if the message spoken by angels was binding and every violation and disobedience received its just punishment, how shall we escape if we ignore such a great salvation? The insidious moral collapse that we find everywhere is nothing less than the action of the leavening of the world. It permeates everything, and it works slowly to induce such a change that you're not always aware of it till, if we were to go to sleep today and wake up 20 years later, we couldn't believe what's happened since. And spiritually, it spells corruption of the heart when we get involved in the leavening of the world. When we were in grade school, we learned about the various changes to substances. The simplest were physical changes, like water. It changes its physical characteristics if it's in one state, like water, and it's different in another state, like ice, or if it's evaporating as a vapor, as in steam. Those are physical changes that happen in nature. But the physical change actually leaves the substance basically intact. Change the temperature, and those things would revert, to water again. Leavening is not a simple physical change. It's a transforming change. It makes a chemical change in the substance, so it's a different type of substance. Leavening induces a chemical change, and the nature of that substance is altered. And that's what the leavening of the world does. It changes the nature of us if we're not careful. To be exposed to the constant sin of hypocrisy, wickedness, error in teaching, it'll eventually have a profound change on each of us and corrupt us, not unlike the chemical change brought about by leavening. The lesson of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is to make us aware that there are influences that can change us if we're not careful. To be aware of the leaven is to be unaware to be aware of the leaven is to be unaware of the satanic influence that can destroy us spiritually. You can't constantly be bombarded by trash day in, day out, day in, day out, and not to expect to get something on you and not to be influenced by it. And even come to expect it as normal. Like when Lot was told to get out of Sodom, you know, he hesitated. "This is my home," no doubt he said to himself. His family says, "Well, where are we going to go? You know, I don't know. I mean, we can survive here," until the angel, you know, put his hand in the small of his back and says, "Get out of here." And then comes the conflagration. And his wife wants to go back, looks back. She got a change too. Solid moral principles of right and wrong, those truths that were discovered by our early parents in the garden and then neglected, have been neglected down through the ages. There are those truths that are self-evident. Even the framers of the Constitution knew that. They even said that. Self-evident truths. We have judges out there who don't even know what self-evident truths are. They don't understand what a truth is. And they're making decisions of life and death on people without even understanding the concept of right and wrong. And then we wonder why many Johnnies are bringing Uzis to school and shooting their classmates. Cause and effect, brethren, cause and effect. It's a law. You go against what Yahweh has established as universal truth and you're going to suffer for it. I remember one brother, and I mentioned this not too long ago, that we visited in an assembly. He says, "You know, I don't even have to prove the Bible's true. I can show you, but if you follow the principles and live by those principles of the Bible, your life is going to be far better off than some guy who ignores those principles and goes a different direction. I can prove right there that the Bible is right and good." You can go against what Yahweh has established as universal truth and you will suffer for it. It's a testimony to Yahweh's power. Think about it. That during the 1960s, when all the corruption just kind of collapsed on this society, Yahweh at that same time was calling truth seekers out. This is when the truth of Yahweh's name really started to grow, when a man put it in a Bible, a sacred name Bible, in the 1960s, and it really started to take off. Then somebody else took it and got on the airwaves, and it started to grow even more. At the same time, the society itself was going, you know, down the tubes. It was a time of great decline, and Yahweh was raising up people who would stand up for the truth, stand up for his name, his feast days. Our job is clearly cut out for us today, brethren. A toll has been exacted, and his people are the last remaining faithful followers of Yahweh above in the midst of a dying culture. The love of many has indeed waxed cold. We live in a generation wandering through life without any goal, any purpose, any idea, but to get wealthy. A generation without natural affection. They don't have courtesy even in driving anymore, it seems. Without the milk of human kindness and love for our neighbor, all of these things that make life rich and satisfying, our society is losing it. Yahweh says the love of many will wax cold. This is a generation that does not know Yahweh, which is poised with sword in hand, ready to cut off the chaff from the wheat. Who are we as a society? Oh, here we are. Romans chapter 1. Here we are. Here's our society. Verse 28. "And even as they did not like to retain Yahweh in their knowledge, he gave them over to a reprobate a depraved, unfit to pass judgment mind to do those things that are not convenient, not fitting, not appropriate. Not by anybody's standards. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliceness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of Yahweh, despiteful, proud boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of Elohim, that they which commit these things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do it. They applaud those that are involved in this worldly leavening. Our society is a society of followers who listen to anybody so long as they don't have any moral judgments. They'll take anything except the truth. So when Yahshua comes back, he asks, will he find the faith on earth? Talk to an elder this feast. Came from back east. He says he believes we're in the falling away right now. We're in the falling away right now. Will there be the faith on earth? Well, eventually, the forces are going to attack from the outside to clam up anyone who preaches the word. Luke 18:8. I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, shall he find, and it says faith. Some Bibles say the faith on the earth. Will he find the faith? I bet if I can today manufacture a mighty one and call him Gabajibu, I'll bet in only a short time, if you have a certain amount of sincerity, you can gather a bunch of followers, significant number, to your new religion. Many are searching for truth in the wrong places. Yahweh says, here is the way, walk ye in it. How many people are willing to do that? To walk in it? I don't think there's very many. Proportionately speaking, there are very few. Very few people are willing to keep his word, to keep his ways, to keep his feasts, his Sabbath. But people are willingly accept anything so long as it's not the truth, you know. It's an amazing phenomenon. People want anything but the scriptures. And go back to the Old Testament? That's just as not on your life. Would they ever do that? There is the foundation right there. First five books of the Old Testament are the foundation of everything in this book. The beginning of Yahweh's plan. The Passover was the last of 10 plagues unleashed on Egypt. Each plague was directed against a certain deity that the Egyptians worshipped. If you look at Exodus 9:14. This wasn't just something willy-nilly that Yahweh, you know, dreamed up. There was a purpose for every one of these plagues. He says, for I will at this time send all my plagues upon your heart and upon your servants and upon your people, that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. For now I will stretch out my hand that I may smite you and your people with pestilence, and you shall be cut off from the earth. So then we see all of those things that he brought. Read the rest through the chapter. Turns the river to blood. Nile was worshipped as the life-giving waters. He made frogs come out. This was the symbol of the deity Heka, which symbolized fertility. Lice, that was against the earth god Geb. Flies, Beelzebub, Lord of the Flies. Yahshua talked about that. Murrain, or disease on the cattle, that was against Apis, the bull god. Boils, Typhon, ashes from the altar, of which to whom human sacrifices were all offered there on the altar. Hail, Isis and Osiris, the gods of the crops. Locust, Serapis, the beetle deity. Darkness, Ra-Aman, the sun god. Firstborn, Because Pharaoh himself was worshipped, you see, as a mighty one. And his son was heir to the throne. If we go to Revelation, we see some of the same plagues unleashed on this earth at the last day judgment on this world. Revelation 6, the four horsemen. Two of those plagues were suffered by Egypt, famine and disease. Famine because of the locusts and disease from the murrain. And next comes darkness, as in Egypt, just as Israel was protected from the latter plagues, but felt the effects of the initial ones, so Yahweh's people will be protected only after the first several plagues are unleashed, we find out in Revelation. How are they protected? Well, let's look at Revelation 7:2 first. It says, "And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living Elohim. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, Hurt not the earth, neither the sea nor the trees, until we have sealed the servants of our Elohim in their foreheads." And of course, the number, 144,000, 12,000 from each tribe. It's a sealing. Chapter 14, verse 1. "And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having what? His Father's name sealed in their foreheads." That's how he seals his people, by his name. 22, verse 4. "And they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. And they're going to reign forever," verse 5. Ever and ever. Chapter 8, verse 7, we see hail, just as in Egypt. Chapter 8, verse 8, blood, like in Egypt. Chapter 9, verse 3, locusts, like in Egypt. You tell me the Old Testament has no relevance? It has relevance beyond us. It has relevance on into prophecy to come. You have two witnesses, just as you had Moses and Aaron, as two witnesses against the kingdom of Egypt. Chapter 12, verse 1. You have an inset chapter. It's actually like a backflash. Flashback, I guess I should say. Say it right. "There appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and she pained to be delivered. There appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads, and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman which was ready to be delivered." What is this woman? It's the assembly, "which was ready to be delivered for to devour her child as soon as it was born." It's also the woman that brought forth Yahshua, Israel. "And she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto Elohim and to his throne." And notice, the woman fled into the wilderness, where she is a place prepared of Elohim for 3,260 days, 3.5 years. 3.5 years she's protected. Why? I would bet that woman, those people, kept Yahweh's Passover. I'll bet they keep his feasts. I know they do. I don't have to bet. It's just a bad term anyway, but don't bet. To keep the feast, the Passover, is a serious matter. Many think of Yahweh not as a heavenly father, but as a heavenly grandfather who would do no harm to his children. He puts up with their spoiled disobedience and doesn't say a thing. Not so. Yahweh warned even believers in the New Testament with sickness and death for observing Passover carelessly. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Chapter 11 and verse 27. And this is actually was something that he leveled against those people through Paul the apostle. "Therefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the master unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the master. But let a man examine himself to make sure he's not unworthy," you see. "And so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For he that eats and drinks unworthily eats and drinks damnation to himself, not discerning the master's body, not discerning, not diakrino, not making a thoroughly discerning judgment. For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. That means they're dead. They didn't rightly discern. Rightly discern. Is it not necessary to get it right? I think we have solid proof today that we need to have everything as proper as we can make it and as we understand it, especially when it comes to Yahweh's days. John 18:28 shows that in Yahshua's day, after Yahshua had observed the Passover and was arrested around midnight, the Jews still hadn't kept it. They still hadn't kept it. They were a day late. John 13:27, among many other passages, we see that the Passover is a memorial. Not a high day. We're buying and selling, we're permitted. And that's why it's called a preparation, preparation for the feast. You know, people call a Friday the preparation. Technically, in the scripture, the only day called the preparation is the Passover. We do prepare for the, you know, Sabbath on Friday, but technically, the term applies to the Passover. You wouldn't be doing any work if it were a high day. Well, so many different doctrines, so many different ideas. It's amazing. During this feast, we've studied the Word, we've examined our lives, we've gone through a lot of teachings. We've looked at the ingredients of leavening and unleavening. It's a time, of course, of correction. Of instruction in our lives. A powerful lesson is found in Numbers chapter 11. Manna is something I equate with unleavened bread, don't you? Numbers chapter 11. And when the people complained, this is a chapter about rebellion of Israel. When the people complained, it displeased Yahweh, and Yahweh heard it, and his anger was kindled. And the fire of Yahweh burnt among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. And the people cried unto Moses, and when Moses prayed unto Yahweh, the fire was quenched. Think Yahweh likes complaining? And the people cried unto Moses, and when Moses prayed, Yahweh quenched the fire because of one man. Who stood between them, almost like Yahshua, standing between us and Yahweh, and being our intermediary. Called the name of the place Taberah, because the fire of Yahweh burnt among them. Then in verse 4, and the mixed multitude, mark that, mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting. And the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? They wanted variety. They wanted the pure, unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. They wanted variety. We want flesh. Give us meat. We remember the fish which we ate in Egypt freely. They didn't eat it freely, no doubt. They had to, you know, pay for it and earn it. But it sounds like so much better when you're thinking back, you know, in memories, things are a lot different. The cucumbers, the melons, and the leeks, and the onions, these were just staples of the working class people back then. And the garlic, where were their minds? Down there in the ground where all these things grow. Their minds were in the dirt. They couldn't grasp a greater purpose here. But now our soul is dried away. There's nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes. It says, the manna was as coriander seed, and the color thereof is the color of delium. And the people went about and gathered it, and what did they do? They ground it in mills, or they beat it in mortar, they baked it in pans, and made cakes of it, and the taste of it was the taste of fresh oil. And when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell upon it. So it was moist, you know, on top of the dew. Then Moses heard the people weep throughout their families. every man in the door of his tent. And the anger of Yahweh was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased. They didn't want, this is symbolic really, a mixed worship. They didn't want pure worship. They had to take this food and they had to mix it all up, beat it in different shapes, bake it in pans, make cakes of it, did all sorts of things, trying to make it different. Kind of like people do with biblical teaching. They got to mix it all up, make it different than what it says. Can't take it straightforward. So anyway, Moses heard it. He was upset. The anger of Yahweh was very much kindled. And Moses said unto Yahweh, wherefore have you afflicted your servant, and wherefore have I not found favor in your sight, that you lay the burden of all this people upon me? I can't imagine 2.5, 3 million, maybe more people constantly complaining, constantly going to Moses, fix it, fix it, fix it. I'm not happy out here. You know, this is the worst place you could have brought us. On and on and on. He had to listen to all of this. I just couldn't imagine it. And he can't handle it anymore either. Have I conceived all this people? He said, are they all my children? Did I, you know, give birth to all these people? Get rid of them. I just can't handle this anymore. Take them away. That's what he says in verse 12. Whence should I have flesh to give unto this people? We have to go out and kill our cattle now so they're all happy. We have to go out and fish in all the lakes and streams and all of this so they're happy in the sea and all that. He says, I'm not able to bear this people alone because it's too heavy for me, verse 14. And if you deal thus with me, you might as well just kill me. If I got to go any farther, I can't handle this anymore. And Yahweh said unto Moses, gather unto me 70 men. This, of course, obviously is the predecessor to the Sanhedrin. 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them unto the tabernacle, the congregation, that they may stand there with you. And I will come down. This is very interesting. I will come down and talk with you there. And I will take of the Spirit which is upon you. Moses had Yahweh's Spirit. And I'll put it upon them, all these men, to help you. And they shall bear the burden of the people with you, that you bear it not yourself alone. Interesting, you know, Yahweh knows our needs before we express them to him. Obviously, he knew this man was at wit's end. But he waited. He waited until he came to him and expressed his urgent need before Yahweh in prayer, that Yahweh answered it. Oftentimes we, you know, fail to go to Yahweh. We try to deal with it ourselves. Yahweh's just waiting. Come to me with your prayer, then I'll answer. And say unto the people, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, you shall eat flesh. For you have wept in the ears of Yahweh, saying, who shall give us flesh to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt, wherefore Yahweh will give you flesh, and you shall eat. And boy, shall you eat. You shall not eat one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days. But a whole month, and it comes out of your nose, and it be loathsome unto you, because you have despised Yahweh, which is among you, and have wept before him, saying, we came forth. Why came we forth? Out of Egypt. Was Yahweh upset because they wanted a change of diet? He was upset because they wanted to go back into that place he just took them out of. He was upset because they wanted the world. That's why Yahweh was angry. And Moses says, the people among whom I am are 600,000 footmen, and you have said I'll give them flesh. They're going to eat a whole month. Are we going to, you know, sacrifice our flocks and herds for all these people? This is just 600,000 men, not counting women, children, old people, whoever. So anyway, Yahweh says, is my hand waxed short? You shall see now whether my word will come to pass or not. And Moses went out and told the people the words of Yahweh and gathered the 70 men of the elders of the people and set them round about the tabernacle. And Yahweh came down in a cloud and spake unto him and took of the Spirit that was upon him and gave it to the 70 elders. And it came to pass that when the Spirit rested upon them, that they prophesied. Interesting. And did not cease. Joel chapter 2. Verse 28, a prophecy. Joel 2:28. And it shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh. What happens when that spirit comes poured out? Your sons, your daughters shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams. Your young men shall see visions. That's going to happen again. It happened back then in Exodus. It's prophesied in Yael. And it's going to happen again. We know what happened in Acts 2, and it's going to happen even again. Because this is speaking of the very end as well. Because I'm going to show wonders in heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness, the moon into blood. I haven't seen that yet. I know that's future. And notice verse 32. It shall come to pass that whoever shall call on the name of Yahweh, those people that are sealed by his name, shall be delivered. You don't think there's importance in that name? If you have that name, you're going to be delivered. He says. Anyway, back in Numbers, verse 26. But there remain two of the men in the camp. The name of one is Eldad, and the name of the other is Medad. And the Spirit rested upon them. Spirit came on those two guys too. And they were of them that were written, but went not out into the tabernacle. And they prophesied in the camp. Now we have two other guys that also got the Spirit. Somehow, by default, I don't know, maybe on purpose. And there ran a young man, obviously it was on purpose, a young man and told Moses and said, Eldad and Medad, they're prophesying in the camp. Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of Moses, one of his young men answered and said, my master, Moses, forbid it. Forbid them. And Moses said unto him, do you envy for my sake? Would Elohim that all Yahweh's people were prophets, and that Yahweh would put his spirit upon them? And Moses got him into the camp, he and the elders of Israel. He wanted to shut these men up. There, I guess he figured there was some kind of competition going on. He says, I wish everybody could prophesy. Not just, this is also involves teaching as well, not just predicting the future. So he said, even though they weren't part of the 70, they were also to be listened to. And there went forth a wind, I'm in verse 31 of Numbers 11, a wind from Yahweh, and brought quails from the sea, and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side, and as it were a day's journey on the other side, and round about the camp, and as it were 2 cubits high among the face of the earth. Some say they flew in a couple of cubits high, you know, probably 3-4 feet tall, you know, zipping along the ground. Just take your club, wham, wham, you can knock them out of the air. And the people stood up all that day and all that night and all the next day, and they gathered the quails. And he gathered 10 omers, and they spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. We finally got what we wanted. Oh, we got meat. Oh, it's going to be so good. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, before it was chewed, the wrath of Yahweh was kindled against the people. And Yahweh smote the people with a great plague because they desired something that Yahweh did not want them to desire. Thinking back to the days of old, the sin that they were involved in the Egyptian delicacies and whatever it was that they wanted, Yahweh says, no. And he called the name of that place Gibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people that lusted. In Hebrew, it means graves of lust. Graves of lust. What carnal man amounts to nothing but wanting the fleshly desires and ultimately those things that lead to death. They couldn't take the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth through the symbol of that manna. They couldn't take what Yahweh wanted to give them. They wanted something more. They wanted to go beyond the book. They wanted flesh to eat. That's mankind, brethren, in a nutshell. That's carnal human nature in a nutshell. That's what we see in our world today. That's the kind of worship. What's in it for me? I'm not happy. I want something more. They long for the days of sin in Egypt. They're motivated by the worldly. They simply refuse to serve Yahweh and do it His way. They want to do it their way. And Yahweh is not pleased. And I guess, you put it all together, that's what this feast is all about. To please Yahweh is to do it His way. This is indeed a feast about pleasing Yahweh. And as we end this day and this feast, I'd like you to think about yourself as an Israelite leaving Egypt, and whether you too long for the desires of the world, for the pleasures, for the fun of it, and find it difficult totally to step out and to take the sincerity of Yahweh's word and apply it. Because that's what we must do if we're going to see everlasting life, to overcome the world and all that it has to offer for something far greater, far more important than a few dollars, than for a job, than for pleasures, entertainment, whatever it might be, to be willing to say, I live for Yahweh, I live a different life. And let Him then offer the blessings that come ultimately with being a child of His through the unleavened bread of truth. May Yahweh bless you.